just remember that when I ask a question, you need to repeat it in your as part of your answer.
Right.
Because my voice won't be there. So.
And then you can erase anything that's a real mess up.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want to say something again, just stop, go back, say it again. And if I catch you not rephrasing the question, I'll try to stop you. And Jenny will too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we are now rolling. Let me just put in this.
So just say your name and your affiliation, if you would.
Hi, I'm Beth Hewitt, and I'm working for University of Maryland, University College, and I'm also an independent researcher and consultant in education.
That'll be interesting, actually. So talk to us a little bit about what you think, how you would define research in composition and rhetoric.
I would define research in composition and rhetoric as research into communication and into a very practical area, typically of writing, but also of trying to influence others through words and also through actions. So generally, I would say that comp-ret research is very practical in nature.
What informs your own research? What questions move you to explore?
I'm most moved to explore questions of, right now, most of my research has been for the last 10 years in online writing instruction, and I've been most moved by wondering why we do it, whether it's worthwhile, what's the point? And so when I look at someone else's research and when I look at what I want to explore next, I'm always looking at what's the point? Where am I going with this? And why are we trying to do something with technology, for example? I try to keep my own bias out of that because I'm biased towards using technology whenever possible if it's going to be useful, but I'm also biased against using technology just for the sake of it. So what is its purpose? Why are we doing this? Should we do it?
And where has that led you? What kind of research are you doing yourself at this point?
I've been working hard for the last several years on research into online writing instruction, particularly the one-to-one conference that occurs in a tutorial or between students and teachers. And it's led very nicely to several published papers about online writing instruction and how students actually use what they are being taught by their teachers or by their tutors in their writing when they have an online conference. I've recently published a book called The Online Writing Conference, A Guide for Teachers and Tutors. And I am also working with the 4Cs Committee on Best Practices for Online Writing Instruction. I'm the committee chair, and we've been trying to discern for the last several years of our constitution what it is that might be considered best practices in online writing instruction. Right now, what we know is that we don't know what the best practices are because we're only beginning to identify what the practices are of people across the country. We've been using surveys, we've been using field interviews, and we've been delving into the literature that's already been researched and just trying to come up with what is happening in American colleges and universities in terms of online writing instruction.
And as the end result of this research, it sounds like you would hope that we'll end up with better composition teachers.
Oh, I hope that we'll end up with better composition teachers and better practices as well. I think that the online setting gives us an opportunity to learn our craft, perhaps for the first time in a conscious way, because what we have had handed down to us for brick and mortar classrooms becomes, it's not as explicitly expressed as what I think we need to do when we move the environment from the brick and mortar classroom into an online setting. And therefore, what we can learn from the online settings will improve what we do in a traditional setting as well as in the online setting.
I had another question in my head as you were talking. What have you learned that has surprised you or excited you in the course of your research?
I think what I've gotten most excited about is the actual semantic level of what it is we say to students. I discovered that we, and this is not a new discovery, speech act theory knows that we talk in either direct language uses or indirect language uses. But what I discovered was that what people believe in terms of the theories that guide them lead them often to indirect uses of language. And when we look at those indirect uses of language in an online setting and compare them against the writing that students do from what they're supposed to be learning from that indirection. And by indirection, I mean suggestions. I mean questions that are rhetorical questions. I mean words, sentences that use conditional language. What would it be like if you would change this paragraph? How would you, I'm gonna have you erase all of that. Because I'm trying to think of some indirection. Would you rewrite this paragraph? Students' answer is often, well, no, I wouldn't. Can you find the comma splice in this sentence? The student's answer is no, you're the teacher. You find it for me and help me. But I'm making a little joke here, but there's a lot of indirect language in our instruction, and I can pretty comfortably say that I could find it in the instruction in almost any college in the country. And that indirection does not usually yield changes in students' writing, and that we need...
Yeah, we're gonna.
This door is actually ajar. Let's see if that helps to close it.
Well, they're almost down.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
Do you remember where you were in the middle of the sentence?
No. That's okay. I'll go back and make something up.
Sorry.
When we use indirection in our teaching, however it's intended, in terms of being polite or not wanting to appropriate students' writing, or for whatever good reasons, students often do not respond to that indirection with any kind of a positive change in their writing. And so what has surprised me is how prevalent this is, how directly related it is to theories of expressivism and social construction and even post-process writing, and how easy it would be for us to change from indirect language to direct language. So one of the primary areas that I've been exploring is how to teach teachers to feel comfortable teaching and using direct language.
That was nice. What's the best piece of advice that anybody ever gave you about research?
The best piece of advice that I've ever gotten about research actually didn't come to me, but went to a friend of mine who was working on her dissertation, and it was from a professor that I highly value and admire. And the professor said, we'll just call her Andrea, Andrea, not every idea is a good idea. And in terms of research, we do get ideas and we get hung up on them and we say, I've got to really explore that. And I say, go girl, go, or go guy, go. You want to explore the things that are fascinating to you, that you have an itch to know more about. But every now and then, someone else who knows a little bit more than we do will say, that's not a very good idea, or that's not going in a fruitful direction. And sometimes we have to listen to that. Not every idea is a good idea.
Is that what you would say to somebody coming out of graduate school as a young faculty member?
Well, I think I would say to people who are coming out of graduate school, particularly those who are worried about getting and keeping a job, is that you need to do the research that moves you, the research that you think is important for our learning more in rhetoric and composition. I don't mean go off on an esoteric bent when you can't afford to, when you're not sure that it will be published and you need to have a publication. But I wouldn't let publication drive everything that you do either. We have an awful lot of publications that are filled with pretty poor material. and research that ought never have seen the light of day, because people are so worried about whether they'll get tenure or whether they'll continue with their jobs. I say do really good research, dig into the data, really think about what you're doing. Look at real problems and try and solve those problems, or at least solve a tiny piece, because we all know that we're not responsible for fixing the whole issue or the whole problem. And do it whether or not 10 years on the line. Do it whether or not you're going to get paid for it. A lot of my research has been as an independent scholar, and I don't get paid a dime, and I don't care, because I really care about what I'm trying to do educationally and pedagogically. If you do what you love, then what you do will love you back, sometimes with money and sometimes with prestige and sometimes just with the satisfaction of knowing that you did something well and that you added to what your field is trying to know and understand.
Nice. Very nice. Okay.